From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to North America's most listened to late night talk show, Coast to Coast AM. Now, next hour, our guest will be David Weiner with a reality check. Should be a fascinating show. He says evil in people is a psychiatric disorder. Well, here's some of the news of the day. We may have won one, finally. The ports deal is almost kaput. And I said almost, and I'll explain that in a moment. The United Arab Emirates owned company says that it would give up its management stake in a very controversial ports deal that has taken Washington by storm and has caused massive upheaval in the president's own party. The Thursday announcement came just hours after Republican leaders warned President Bush that the House and the Senate appeared ready to block the Dubai Ports World from taking over some terminal operations at U.S. ports. The company said its decision was based on an understanding that DP World will have time to effect the transfer in an orderly fashion and that DP World still will not suffer economic loss. Now, that's a clincher here. Key phrase, they will not suffer economic loss. I think they overpaid the $6.8 billion for this company from England. They overpaid for it. So now what's the definition of will not suffer economic loss? Keep an eye on that phrase. But for now, it appears that we won this battle. DP World finalized a $6.8 billion purchase earlier Thursday of P&O, which through a U.S. subsidiary runs important operations in New York, New Jersey, Baltimore, New Orleans, Miami, and Philadelphia. It also plays a lesser role in dockside activities at 16 other American ports. We said well over a month ago that this would be a major story when we broke it, and indeed, that's what it became. But keep an eye on this phrase, will not suffer economic loss. So what happens in the meantime, I do not know. Story's not over yet, but at least it looks like we're winning the ballgame. After a long battle with Congress that went down to the wire, President Bush signed a renewal of the USA Patriot Act on Thursday, a day before 16 major provisions of the old law expire. Bush said the Patriot Act is a vital thing to win the war on terror and protect Americans. Japan's outspoken foreign minister referred to Taiwan as a law-abiding country, and that drew a strong protest from China, which considers the island a part of China. I don't know where this is going to lead, but if Japan keeps pushing, so will China. This could be a mess. Well, the foreign minister of Japan, who has riled China in recent months with a series of critical comments, told a parliamentary committee that Japan and Taiwan share democracy in a market economy. Taiwan and China split amid civil war in 1949, and China has repeatedly warned Taiwan against adopting a new constitution, which it views as a step toward declaring formal independence. Beijing still claims sovereignty over that island. A deadly strain of bird flu could appear, they say, in the United States in the next few months as wild birds migrate from the infected nations. This according to the Homeland Security Chief Michael Chertoff. He said this after the United Nations said a similar thing. Chertoff said that there will be a reasonable possibility of a domestic fowl outbreak as migrating birds mix with ducks, chickens, and other birds in the United States. But he cautioned against panic, noting that the Agriculture Department has dealt with other strains of bird flu for years. And again, this does not mean that it's going to mutate and affect all of us. Well, earlier on spaceweather.com, they were talking about an asteroid that came very close on March 6th to hitting the planet Earth, 2 million miles or so. But as I was looking at the asteroids that have come past us, one just did, 155,000 miles, called 2006, that's 2006 EC, 155,000 miles. They really didn't mention too much about that one. That's closer than 2 million miles. Jittery NASA scientists waited, by the way, for most of the advanced spacecraft ever to send to the planet to make its risky final approach to Mars, where it is due to return 10 times the data of all previous probes put together. NASA's unmanned Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, which has traveled some 300 million miles since leaving Earth in August, was due to enter its most delicate phase on Friday. It will try to ease into orbit around Mars, which has defeated two-thirds of all man-made craft sent there. So we'll keep an eye on that with Richard C. Hoagland tomorrow night. The Cassini space probe has found evidence of geysers erupting from underground pools of liquid water on Saturn's moon Enceladus. This is an incredible story. High-definition pictures beamed back from the probe showed huge plumes of ice coming from the moon's south pole. What does it all mean? In a moment, senior scientist at NASA's Astrobiology Institute, David Morrison, will explain this to us. Does it mean the possibility of life? Let's find out on Coast to Coast AM. Well, now, a story that raced through the internet today that was erroneously reported by an Orlando television station. They said that NASA was going to announce at 2 o'clock Eastern time that they had found life out there in the solar system. No, that was not the story. The story was that the Cassini space probe had found evidence of geysers, liquid water, erupting from underground pools of liquid water on one of Saturn's moons. That was the real story. Well, David Morrison is the senior scientist at the NASA Astrobiology Institute, where he participates in a variety of research programs in astrobiology. Dr. Morrison received his PhD in astronomy from Harvard University, and until he joined NASA, he was the professor of astronomy at the University of Hawaii. Among his honors is a NASA Outstanding Leadership Medal for his contributions to dealing with the hazard of asteroid and comet impacts. He's currently the president of the International Astronomical Union Working Group on Near-Earth Asteroids and Asteroid 2410. Morrison is named in his honor. He's our guest on Coast to Coast. David, welcome back. How are you?
Hi, George. It's a pleasure to be talking to you
sure.
again.
God, lots to talk with you about. As a matter of fact, with the background you've got in asteroids, this one 2006 EC that came from 155,000 miles from the planet, that's pretty close, isn't it?
Yes, it is, but it happens all the time. The only difference is now we tend to discover them and detect them and tell you about it, and a few years ago we wouldn't even have known it.
Tell us about the Cassini space probe finding what could be pools of liquid water on an area that should be frozen.
That's
this is
right.
Incredible.
Out there at the Saturn system, it's extremely cold, and ice should be frozen solid. Saturn has a whole bunch of icy satellites, and Enceladus is not particularly notable. It's not even very big. It's just 300 miles across. But they've discovered that its polar region is hot, not cold, relatively speaking hot, and that there are cracks there, and that some of them are spewing out geysers of liquid water, which means at a much higher temperature than you'd expect at Saturn.
Does that tell you that it's got a pretty active core?
I'm not sure what it says, except there certainly must be internal energy, and it probably is produced by tides, just the way Jupiter's satellites, Io and Europa, are heated by the tides of Jupiter. This one apparently is heated by the tides of Saturn.
Now, David, I assume that once this liquid water gushes to the surface, it then freezes, obviously, right? It can't stay liquid for long.
That's right. It sprays out. It freezes instantly into little tiny crystals. And the whole region around Enceladus is filled with a very thin, tenuous mass of these little ice crystals that actually form a ring around Saturn.
Now, why was this story so hot today? Now, I was mentioning an Orlando television station made the mistake. They read the release from NASA and made the assumption that they were going to announce that life had been found in the solar system. Not true. But why is this such a hot story? Why is it a big one?
Well, it's a pretty remarkable little satellite in any way, and I'm glad to know that it's so different. Every one of these things we go to seems to have its unique properties. But I'm sure what has caught most people's attention is the liquid water. Astrobiologists who've been trying to study the extremes in which life can operate and to think about what life would be like elsewhere have concluded that liquid water is the one requirement. There's no life that we know of without liquid water. And so far, the only places with clearly known oceans of liquid water have been Earth and Europa, the Jupiter moon. And now we have Enceladus, which is another one, the third. And it actually has some advantages because the liquid water isn't just buried deep down inside, but apparently sprays out, where in principle you could send a spacecraft rather easily and pick some of it up and look at it up close.
The temperature on the south pole of Enceladus is minus 370 degrees Fahrenheit.
And that's hot.
That's cold.
That's hot for Enceladus. I mean, this is a place where the pole is hotter than the equator. And so you already know there's something kind of weird going on.
Well, that's true. Now, Saturn has 31 known moons.
Are you counting?
I sure do. I count them all the time. And I do. You didn't know that, did you?
No, but I believe anything.
But with 31 known moons, this is one strange planetary system, David, because, you know, we've got Titan, which is remarkable by itself, Enceladus, which is remarkable by itself. It's beginning to seem to me that this solar system, maybe this universe, may have all kinds of things like this throughout the entire place.
I think that's a fair presumption. The more we explore, the more really neat places we find, and almost everyone is different from every other one.
What do we do now? You know, the Cassini probe doing its thing, you know, I don't know how much data we're going to be able to get from it. When we discover things like this, the methane on Titan, the liquid water on Enceladus, what do we do? Do we change our plans in terms of our satellites and our launches and what we plan to do in the future? Do we decide, hey, we better go to this one?
Well, we should make those kinds of decisions, but it doesn't happen quickly because you want to think it through rather carefully before you commit all the time and money to a mission. Right now, we're in the unfortunate position where due to the budget problems at NASA, we don't have an outer planet follow-up program to either Jupiter or Saturn or their moons. So this will mean, if we go there again within your and my lifetime, it will mean that there'll have to be some shift of priorities.
Other areas that, of course, have evidence of water, liquid water, Mars, possible Europa, as we were talking about within Saturn with methane. What does this tell you, David, about the universe? What does it tell you about the solar system specifically in terms of the fact that these are starting to show up now?
Well, there is a real diversity of habitats, and some of them may indeed be habitats. They may be places where life could exist. We don't know. We still only know about life on Earth. We've never seen any convincing evidence of life anywhere else, but we are gathering the tools to do a real exploration for life, both within our solar system and eventually planets around other stars. So it's a great time to be alive. It's not going to happen in the next 5 or 10 years, I don't think, but we are getting close to the point where we can seriously search for life beyond the Earth.
Do we know if there are any organisms, have we ever tested this in a laboratory, for example, that can survive minus 370 degrees Fahrenheit?
There are a number of organisms that can survive it, but they can't do anything. They're frozen solid, and you have to heat them back up before anything can happen.
All right.
For life to really, really operate, it's got to have liquid water, and it's got to have a source of energy. And maybe Enceladus furnishes those.
What do you think the temperature then could be from the source of the water that's coming up as a liquid?
Well, water freezes at 32 degrees. It's got to be that warm.
Okay, so if that's possible, then life could exist down there.
If the water is stable for long periods of time, if there's a source of energy, if there's organic material, we don't know the answers to those questions yet.
What then do scientists, astronomers, astrobiologists do with this kind of information? I mean, if you all had a wish list, what would you do with this? Where would you take it?
Well, I think if we had a wish list, we'd put together a mission to go out there, and it might not even have to land on the surface. It could just fly the spacecraft through those plumes of ice, collect pieces of it, and examine it, maybe even bring it back to Earth. But I'm just speculating. I mean, this is new. We only just learned about it. And I'm sure a lot of scientists smarter than me will think about what would be the right mission to do.
Yeah, tell us exactly, how did Cassini find the evidence of these geysers? What happened?
We first got a hint of it 25 years ago when the Voyager spacecraft went by, because we saw that some parts of Enceladus were heavily cratered, the way all these moons are, and some parts were smooth. And so something was already going on strange there. We did not fly over the pole. It took Cassini to get in much closer and to come in over the pole, where you really see these unique features, the relatively warm spots, and the geysers. And the spacecraft has flown close to Enceladus two or three times and made these measurements until they were really convinced that they understood what was happening.
Do we know how high these geysers are shooting into the...
Actually, they shoot all the way to infinity because the gravity of Enceladus is not strong
okay.
enough for them to come back down. So once they go out, they just keep going out.
So Cassini is scheduled to fly by again in 2008.
Right,
maybe at that time they can do a little flyby and see if they can pick up some samples. I mean, does it have the capability of doing that?
No, it has the capability of analyzing individual atoms, and that's one reason we know this is water, because it's done that. But it can't actually collect pieces of ice or do anything that we could possibly think of with life detection.
So what we really need to do is get another probe out that way.
That's right, but then we also need to think pretty hard about just exactly how to instrument it and what is the key experiment to make.
How big is this moon? Do we know, David?
300 miles across.
That's it?
Yeah, it's a little thing. Has no right to be so interesting.
It has no, it shouldn't even have these kinds of properties on it.
You're absolutely right. That's what makes this a newsworthy story.
Okay, now we've got that, and I've got to talk to you about asteroids before we lose you. The what's going on with the near-Earth tracking systems?
They are being phenomenally successful. We've gotten to the point now where we discover two or three new near-Earth asteroids every night with one of these telescopes. And the list, I guess, is now well over 3,000. So it's coming along fine, and the good news is that not one of them is going to hit the Earth. The bad news, or at least the interesting news, is that there are a couple of them, which they certainly aren't expected to hit the Earth, still have a very slight possibility, and we will need to make very careful observations to make sure they don't hit.
Well, now give me some odds here, David. You've always been a straight shooter with us on Coast to Coast. What do you think one day we're going to wake up in the morning and either hear on the radio or we're going to see on television that some huge asteroid plunked down either in the ocean or hit some landmass on this planet? Possible?
If you don't worry about that word huge, we've already pretty much done a survey of the huge ones, and there aren't any huge ones, that is, ones miles across, that would hit us. If you're worried about being hit by something that's just the size of a building, then sure, it could happen any time, and we would be unlikely to predict it in the state of the art today.
So it would be just a hit, and then we'd be doing our post-mortem.
Yeah, it'd be like any other natural disaster where you didn't know it was coming and you go pick up the pieces afterwards. What the astronomers want to change, of course, what we're working to do is make it completely different from other natural disasters, that we could predict it long in advance, and if we knew the asteroid was on a collision course, we could send a spacecraft out and deflect it so it wouldn't even hit.
Just had a story this week that in Egypt, they have just discovered by looking at satellite photos a crater of a huge impact that had occurred millions and millions of years ago. What is so astounding to me is, why are we still finding these things on the planet?
Well, if you were covered up by several feet of drifting sand, it'd be a hard time finding you, too. I mean, that's the problem. You have to use special techniques to see this very faint underlying topography under the sand dunes of the Sahara Desert.
So really, from space, you really can't see a huge crater impact site.
You can't just look and see it. You can make some radar measurements that are relevant. Guys get very smart about how to tell, but if you were standing there on the surface, all you'd see is the sand dunes.
David, I was looking at some pictures today from an organization that had some digital photography of what they thought was Noah's Ark on Mount Ararat. And I got to tell you, to me, it looks like a huge snowdrift or something up there in the mountain. Yet they're convinced that's where the Ark is. I guess, though, satellite technology has really changed the face of this planet, hasn't it?
We can certainly look at things a lot better than we ever could before. But, if somebody thinks there's a real thing up on Mount Ararat, why not just go up and look? This isn't like trying to look at Enceladus or Mars or something. It's right there. If it's real, you could find it and settle the thing easily.
Have you had your wish list on one mission only, where would you go?
Mars is still the most interesting planet, the one other planet that used to have an Earth-like environment, and so might really have life like us.
Great.
Enceladus is great, but I'll pick Mars as my first choice.
Great. Thanks, David. Appreciate the update on this incredible story. It's astrobiologist David Morrison about the Cassini space probe finding evidence of geysers erupting from underground pools of liquid water on Saturn's moon Enceladus. I'm going to have open lines for you when we come back. Here are the numbers. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line is 818-501-4721. And the wild card line, 818-501-4109. Well, if you have a moment, get up to the feature article on the coasttocoastam.com website. Take a look at what Lex has posted there. Who is Dexter Monterey? We are going to have one heck of a time with our Friday night and the Saturday morning open lines on our next program. But the last hour I have reserved to allow Dexter Monterey, the talk show host from the 22nd century, 2-2, that's a long way out there. He is going to do the last hour. So get a hold of the feature article on the coasttocoastam.com website. Last night, by the way, while I was wrapping up the program, talking to Dr. Michael Sala about UFOs, alien abductions, and what the government is not telling us, the last final seconds, I was gone. I disappeared. I was gone, I'm telling you. You could hear Dr. Sala right at the end going, hello? 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 It was almost like the ending of the War of the Worlds, the real radio program with Orson Welles. I don't know what happened. Nobody knows what happened. All of a sudden, I was just gone. Everything was clipped, and that's never happened before. It was one bizarre story. But thank you to the thousands of you who have emailed me wanting to make sure I was okay. Yes, I'm fine. Believe me, it baffled me as much, too, because I could hear Dr. Sala looking for me, and he obviously couldn't hear me looking for him. Lastly, After Dark newsletter, we are giving out 14 issues for the price of 12, but I wanted to tell you, you will get the April issue, which includes a great interview with none other than Alex Jones. So you can call 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505. Or you can go online, coasttocoastam.com. You know, though I don't think they will, I would hope that Congress would continue to work on its legislation to pass whatever they're supposed to pass to stop and officially block this Dubai ports story and situation from occurring. Because even though it appears that we have won in our efforts to get this thing blocked by this company deciding to back off, they left themselves in out, and that basically was that as long as they are not financially hurt by the deal, they will get out of it. So what's the definition of that? I mean, a dollar? That's the thing I don't like. I mean, it gives them the opening to control the ports, and they can always say, well, we're financially hurt. We can't sell it yet. And it'll go on and on and on. So I do think if any members from Congress are listening to the program tonight, you still need to pass that legislation to block this because, you know what, remember the old saying, you got to dot the I's and cross the T's? It's not a done deal yet here. Let's go on to the phones. Wildcard line, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Kay in Ohio. I've been listening to your show for a short while now, and I sometimes hear people calling in about numbers. Many years ago, I had a really weird dream, unlike anything I've ever had before. In this dream, I kept seeing the same things over and over. It was a sequence of numbers. I kept seeing them written out as words, as numbers, as Roman numerals, you know, like different fonts. And at the same time, I kept hearing many voices saying over and over the same numbers. And these numbers were, in this order, 9, 7, 11. And I was wondering if any of your other callers had ever called in about these numbers or you know anything about
them? No, not these numbers or not the sequence. You know, I get 1111 a lot personally, and other people get certain other numbers like 333, but the 9711, nope. They sound pretty lucky to me, though. Maybe it's time for you to head off to Vegas or something.
Well, no, I tried lottery numbers. I called all my friends back then and said maybe these are lottery numbers, but the thing that was so weird, it was just not a dream about numbers, but it's just that these voices over and over, and I kept seeing it. That was the entire dream, over and over and over. So I thought, since I started listening to your show, I thought maybe this is something special, and the guy who called in earlier, the biblical numeral scholar, maybe he knows something about it. I don't know.
Maybe something's going to happen on September 7th in the year 2011.
I don't know.
You know, who knows?
Know.
All right, that's something for you just to write down and remember. Remember the story a couple weeks ago. Somebody had emailed me that when he popped open a fortune cookie, he got his lottery numbers, and so he's played it. He played those lottery numbers over and over and over and over again. Finally decided, you know what, forget it. It's never going to happen. The following week, I guess, was the big win. With those numbers, he didn't bet. He didn't have the lottery numbers. $50 million. No kidding. Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Hello. Hi.
Hi, this is Jim from San Diego. And thanks, George, for keeping up us up on things and covering all the bases.
We will watch any crevice on this planet, Jim. We are going for it. Nothing's going to get by us.
My question for you is, what do you think, is there a treaty on jurisdiction on outer space, the planet? Suppose like the Japanese want to buy special rights to a certain moon or something like that.
Yes, so there's supposed to be an agreement that there is no ownership of anything in space. That came up, by the way, when I interviewed a fellow from a company called Lunar Embassies, which he's gotten into some hot water in China especially, and he might have had some problems here, I'm not sure, where he's trying to sell off land on Mars and the moon. And believe it or not, he has made millions selling 1 or 2 acres of property. He claims he owns it by his rights. But there is, I believe, an official acknowledgement between countries that there is no ownership.
Well, my only concern is this. If we go out there, there may be prior owners, you know.
Oh, yeah. That may be one reason why we haven't gone back.
Yeah.
You know, the prior owners may have told us, get off our property. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Sandy from Iowa.
Hi, Sandy.
And a few weeks ago, you were talking about people that work the graveyard shift to call in.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you're ever going to have a call-in show about people that work in graveyards or work in funeral homes.
Ooh, that's not a bad. I don't know if we would restrict it to that, but we'd at least allow them to call in. That's an interesting possibility. Why would you come up with that?
Oh, because I work in a cemetery.
Oh, you did or you do?
I do. I work seasonal from April to October.
What do you do?
I do groundwork, and then I do security over Memorial Day weekend.
You work days or nights?
We spend the night in the cemetery over Memorial Day weekend.
All right, so tell me.
Huh?
Has anything ever happened to you?
Oh, yeah, there's been a lot of stuff. When I'm down there weed eating, you always feel like somebody's around you. In fact, I don't know how many times I've turned around and thinking somebody else I work with. And one time I looked over, and they have, like, these family crypts or mausoleums.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I just happened to look up, and it looked like a man standing up there in, like, a 1800s suit, you know, the black suit that they used to... the Undertaker suit or whatever.
And all those long ones, yeah.
Yeah, and they happened to me twice, and I had another coworker come up and ask me, do you always, excuse me, have the feeling that somebody's around you when you're down here working? I said, yeah. And I found a coffin handle up in the real old part of the cemetery one time when I was weed eating an antique coffin handle.
Are you creeped out by the place?
No, I like it.
It's kind of serene, isn't it?
Yeah, it was in Life magazine, one of the 10 most beautiful cemeteries in the United States.
Well, that's because you're contributing to keeping the grounds all taken care of. Thanks. Appreciate you being on the program. Well, let's go next to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air. Hi there.
George, hey, greetings from Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi, good to have you with us. What's up?
Well, there's a looming financial meltdown on the horizon, and it involves a number of factors. There is a gentleman who used to be with the National Security Agency in the 60s, and for whatever reasons, boredom or whatever, left for a position on Wall Street and then discovered a fair amount of collusion and corruption. Christian left and formed his own advisory company, and now he advises people through his website. And the website allows anyone to download the current 50-page newsletter, which is the distillation of his effectively 50 years of
knowledge. Well, why do you think there's going to be a meltdown?
Okay. Artificially, the Wall Street insiders with their plunge protection fund have artificially augmented or propped up the stock market and also have artificially suppressed the value of gold and silver. It is a fact that since 1933, by executive order, no less, and that was April of 1933, and then Congress passed House Joint Resolution 192, which terminated the gold standard. Okay, so at that point, George, according to these acts, the corporate United States was bankrupted and in receivership to foreign banking interests. And it's very possible, George, that since the foreign creditors, being the Bank of England, the Rothschild family, et cetera, they are the creditors primarily of all the corporate bankruptcy debt. And it's possible that the sale with the Dubai port was a fact that they wanted to be in possession of real physical tangible property because of the debt instruments they had purchased.
Well, that's very possible. I tell you what you should do is also email me that individual. I'll check his website first before we pass that on to any of our Coast to Coast listeners. Yeah, but in terms of a meltdown, you know, it's going to go one way or the other. It's either going to be a meltdown or they're going to continue to prop it up artificially, but it's going to be propped up and they're going to keep pushing it for another 5 or 10 years. Which way? I have no idea which way it'll go. Let's go to our next wild card line. You're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing? This is Brian in Huntington Beach. Thanks for taking my call.
What's going on? My pleasure, Brian.
Just got done reading the book Firestarter by Stephen King, and it's gotten me thinking about a couple of things, and I'm sure you've probably read it, and I would recommend it to anybody that hasn't read it. It's and then his afterword in the book, he talks about some of the government studies that were done on so-called wild talents, those being psychic abilities, specifically telekinesis, psychic healing, telepathy, pyrokinesis, and things like that. I know this is a topic that especially the experiments that were done during the Cold War years and that kind of thing, or the studies rather, that's been visited probably a lot of times. But I was wondering if you knew of any recent studies or information that have been formally done or informally on these type of phenomenon.
Well, let me tell you, you're funny that you bring that up. I would ask you to simply wait a few more months for my first book called Worker in the Light that will address some of that. And I don't want to say too much about it right now, but do that. In terms of reading Stephen King's book, I have not read it yet. East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, George. I'm calling from Cape Girardeau, side of the UFO crash.
Oh, that's right, 1941. I just wish somebody would have that hard evidence for us.
I got approximately where it's at, but I ain't real sure still.
How close is it to Southeast Missouri State?
Say what?
Where the college is, where my son went to school right out there.
Oh, I'm at the Southeast Missouri Hospital.
Well, that's not too far then from there.
No, it's about half a mile.
Not far at all. Is it still pretty woodsy out there?
There's still some marsh left, but for the most part, they're chopping it down. I think they're fixing to build over it with malls and stuff. Could have just put a new stoplight outside of town, George.
Have you taken a little walk through where you think the craft may have crashed?
No, I think it crashed out in one of the put fields there now, I think.
See, I think the sheriff is dead. Leonard Stringfield, who investigated it, he's dead. A lot of real great people who investigated all that, they're gone.
Man, I wish I had something more about that. That's the closest I ever came to a UFO crash, George. But I was really calling about Pink Floyd, the album, The Dark Side of the Moon. I know he played a lot.
Yes, we did. What about
songs?
What about him?
If you start that album at the same time with Disney's Alice in Wonderland, as soon as the Queen disappears on it,
right?
And you start the album the same time, so it's coinciding, and you know it's coinciding because the cat's eyes are blink with a bead in there at the very beginning.
Okay.
On Breathe On Me. And you'll really know it's coinciding about a little bit into it. You know where he says, run, rabbit, run, at that part?
So you think they created that song and tied it right into the Disney Alice in Wonderland?
George, I ain't real sure if they did, but it sure ties in with it.
All right. Somebody, I will assign somebody out there in our vast audience to go ahead and check that out for me, because I don't have the time, but I'd like to see it. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Thank you.
Sure.
Hi, George. A pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
To your previous caller, I think I heard that same thing about the Dark Side of the Moon connected with The Wizard of Oz. I don't know which one is true.
I wonder if it's an old wives' tale or if it's real.
I don't know. I never tried it. But that wasn't why I was calling. I'm calling because this afternoon I called my congressman here in Altoona, Pennsylvania, and my senator about the very thing that you opened your comment with at the opening of your show. I was trying to find out what Senator John Warner was referring to when he quickly said DP World would suffer no economic loss as a result of the divesting in this deal. And the money trail, George, I have more questions than I do have answers. Who would have got the money, this $6 or $7 billion, if the deal had gone through? Who would have got?
Whoever these individual shareholders are of this London-based company. So we don't know who these players are. It's a company based in the United Kingdom. They have a number of shareholders. It's a very old company, but those are the people who would have reaped the $6.8 billion. I have no idea who they are.
But our people, the unnamed CFIUS people, prove it.
True.
Okay. Whatever that is, it seems to remain a mystery. But the way John Warner said that this afternoon when I was watching it on CNN, it almost sounded like, well, the deal's not going to go through, but maybe they'll keep the money because they're not going to keep have any economic loss.
Well, see, this is what's happened. They've closed on the deal. The $6.8 million has already gone to the London-based company. DP Worlds, in essence, owns the ports and owns the company that is running the ports. We were working on this deal, this legislation, to stop it, and apparently we had enough votes to muster it, and we were going to slap that on the president's desk, and then he was going to veto it, and then whether we had enough votes to override it or not, I do not know. Now the Dubai Ports World group has popped up and said, all right, we're getting out of it. Don't worry about it. We're gone. But they put in these caveats, as you've just said, and as I pointed out, that we will not suffer any economic loss. What I think is going to happen, and even though on the face of it, it looks like all of us who are opposed to this deal, we might have won here, they may simply sit back, and who knows how long it's going to take, one, to find a buyer, and two, to find a buyer that will give them the kind of money they're asking for. Who knows who it could be? But
Halliburton?
Or they keep it, and they let months and months go by, and everybody just forgets about it, and they've got it. We can't let up on this yet, and I hope our Congress, as I pointed out, continues to pass the legislation like they were going to, as if nothing has stopped this deal yet, because they still have the right to keep that. And at any time, they'll simply say, no, we were going, this is an economic loss if we sell this company. So it's a very dangerous situation. We're not out of the woods yet with that. And we just need to make sure everybody wakes up and looks at what's going on. We'll be back in a moment with a very special guest, David Weiner, as we talk about a reality check, what your mind knows but isn't telling you. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.